Chapter 51.
"This could be good news," Tisus said in a voice that told Kip the sentence was bound to continue in a direction he wasn't going to like. "But I doubt it."
"Thought so."
"You remember I told you about my cousin Antonius?" she said.
"The one you said got all the family charisma," Kip said. "This is him?"
"I might not have mentioned his flaws."
The island was like the intertwined fingers of lovers this morning. Soft and hard, billows of fog covering and revealing 1,000 spears and muskets arrayed on every shore around the island. The beauty of the warm, diffuse light of the rising sun setting off the threatened death.
"So what about this could be good news?" Kip asked.
"Lord Gael,"
Derwin Aleph of the Cooney Moor said, coming up to them,
"the men are ready."
Everyone had formed up neatly with their various constituencies. They weren't integrated or arrayed exactly the way Kip would have preferred. It would do for now. Kip hadn't read any books on what to do when you're outnumbered and surrounded, and on an island. Probably because no competent commander in history had ever put himself in such a position.
"Good.
We wait," Kip said.
He motioned for Tisus to go on.
"Antonius is amazing. I got to spend a couple of weeks with him every time we'd swap off at the Chromeria."
Kip had known the Malagos family had been required to send hostages to the Jaspers to enforce the end of the Blood Wars, and that Tisus had been one such hostage, but he hadn't thought through the mechanics of alternating the hostages.
"Everyone loves him, but he's a total idealist. Thinks the best of people, but follows authority dogmatically because he trusts that those in command are acting as he would act if he were in their place. I never wanted to tear down my sister by telling him not to trust her that way. I hoped that he would grow out of it on his own, more gently."
"So we're fucked." Kip considered it a moral victory that he didn't say that aloud. That was good, because a moral victory was the only kind of victory he was going to get today. He said, "Allies don't surround you to cut off every escape."
"You convinced age-old enemies to join together yesterday," Tisus said. "This shouldn't be as hard as all that, right?"
Her tone was light, but he could tell she was scared too. If it came to it, would Kip's outcasts attack Irina Malagos's people? Would he? If he did, even a win would embark Kip on a terrible course. The marriage with Tisus was supposed to make peace. That had been Andros Gael's whole reason for arranging for Tisus to think the marriage was her own idea. Apparently, Irene had figured out that Kip had more to lose from a clash of arms than she did, or she simply didn't believe that he would bring it to that, which might be true. Or perhaps she thought Tisus had been kidnapped and forced into this marriage. A rowboat emerged from the mists. A standard-bearer held a green flag with a Malagos bull mounted on Antonius's personal sigil, a shield. So the young man saw himself as a shield for his aunt, Irene Malagos, and his cousin, Tisus, a saver of damsels in distress. Wonderful. Antonius Malagos didn't look as if he'd come with wedding gifts. He did look young, with a lean build. He held a spear and a pair of red spectacles sat high on his head. He was light-skinned and boyishly handsome, with blonde ringlets. His men rode toward where Kip and his leaders stood apart. Cruxa stood behind Kip and to his left, bearing a flag of the mighty. Was that Kip's personal seal now? It would have to do until they could come up with a flag for the Nightbringers. Tisus was at his right, and at his left stood Con Arthur and Derwin Aleph. On seeing Tisus, Antonius's face lit up. Gap-toothed and wide-mouthed, he had an infectious smile, and mere streaks of red through his irises.
"Sissy," he said.
Ignoring a sharp word from one of his men, he used the spear he held to vault off the boat and land ashore without soiling his fine boots. He rushed over and hugged her like a little boy, picking her up and spinning her around in a circle. She smiled too, eyes dancing. Kip was suddenly glad that he knew Antonius was her cousin, because being jealous of someone who gave his wife joy would have been pretty shitty. He put her down and stepped back, and clouds rolled over his open demeanor.
"Or should I say Lady Gael now?" he asked.
"I am proudly both," Tisus said, "but if you're going to call me Sissy, do you want me to call you..."
"Ahem," he winced playfully.
"Maybe not in front of my men,"
Tisus said. "Then let me introduce you. Lord Antonius Malagos, my husband, Kip Gael, Kip, my cousin Antonius."
The Malagos men had come to bracket their commander once more, and in contrast to his open spirit and happy demeanor, they had the air of men ready for violence.
Sissi?
Kip asked Tisis under his breath as Antonius introduced his lieutenants. It was an artful introduction, though personal rather than the full introduction, with all of Kip's newly claimed titles. That would have sounded more impressive, but also directed attention to whose title was biggest, and how these powers would interact with each other. Kip would need to remember to praise Tisis for that later, if they had a later. How the hell had Irene Milagos gotten word that they would be here?
I've had less kind nicknames, Tisis murmured.
Introductions of his subordinates concluded, Antonius straightened his shoulders and cleared his throat. He looked pained.
My dearest cousin, Irene has given me some very strict orders. I feel compelled to...
Where have you been? Tisis asked.
Smart. Never let an idealist frame your problem in black and white.
Things have changed very quickly, and your orders may well have been, outpaced by events.
Because you've come here on skimmers, and I couldn't possibly have heard something as recently as you? Antonius asked.
Yes, how do you even know?
Our family has skimmers now, too. Not as big as those you have covered over there, but enough for a drafter and a messenger to travel quickly together. I was upriver near the floating city with Satrap Willowbar. My orders are only a week old.
In other words, almost as soon as Kip and his friends had blasted past Wrath, Irene had sent her hounds after them.
Shit.
How did you get designs for the skimmers? Kip asked. Commander Ironfist showed us how to build one. Former commander, I guess. As you said, events have been moving quickly.
Why would he give you such a secret? Kip asked. It was more thinking aloud than the question he expected answered, but Antonius said,
Irene promised him all our intelligence on your location.
So he's coming here? Kip asked.
Having Ironfist come to join them was the best news he could imagine.
I don't know. Apparently he spoke with his sister, the Nukaba, who was our guest at the time. They had a spectacular fight. He disappeared after that, and she left the next day. I don't know if they were together or if they parted ways.
Well, that went from good news to bad quickly. If Ironfist had been coming here, he should have made it already, unless he'd been waylaid. Ironfist was intimidating, but he'd also been traveling alone, in these woods, with no law to speak of and many, many talented archers. What if he'd been killed by some idiot bandits?
But that's beside the point, Antonia said. Tisis, Irene ordered me to come here and take you home, by force if necessary. Come home, Sissi. Your family needs you. Your sister needs you.
Home, Tisis said quietly, nostalgic. I can't tell you how much I miss the terraced gardens of Jack's Hill.
Tisis had a home and a place. Not just sleeping in the woods, arguing with a boy and in constant danger. An honored place as heir to a vast fortune. Her sister Irene was the real power in Hrothgar. Surely there would be important, fulfilling work for a woman like Tisis there. It made him feel the gulf between them again. He had no home. Twice an orphan. Flames and death had taken everything except the mighty from him. Then Kip was struck by the thought that perhaps last night had not been the perfect time to have his first big fight with his bride. With one more word, she could destroy them all.
I miss Irene. I miss the mansion, Tisis said. My old rooms. I miss our people. The smell in the air. The festivals. The races. But I have no home but at my husband's side.
Oh, good. She doesn't want me and all my friends and allies dead.
So you're here by choice, truly? The slave Verity said so, but Irene didn't trust a slave with such a claim.
Why would you name a slave Verity and then not trust her? Mercifully, Kip didn't say it aloud. But then, his holding his tongue twice in a row meant he was probably due for a blunder any time. Antonius went on.
You can't tell me the truth. Kip can't hurt you now, and if necessary, we can do this in such a way that Andros Gyle never hears about it.
And there was only one way that could happen.
Balls.
This smiling boy was threatening a massacre. Kip heard something quite like a growl from Con Arthur. Tisis was right about one thing. Antonius was an idealist. If he thought he would simply leave this parley to go order their massacre, he was going to find his head separated from his ass in short order. Tisis said,
Cousin, I am not only here by choice, but by design, as my letters should have confirmed. This marriage was my idea, and it may well be the smartest thing I've ever come up with. Irene intends to imprison Kip when he can serve the 7 satrapies and our house both instead. When he can help save Blood Forest and Hrethgar.
The Giles unseated you, Antonio said. You were the Green. You've simply forgiven them that?
Through which Kip heard, Irene hasn't. Again Kip was struck with a thought. Maybe he had all this capacity to be struck with thoughts, because he wasn't speaking. He hadn't said anything at all. He, Kip Guile, leader of the mighty, slayer of kings and gods. Fine, singular for each, so far. But he, the breaker, possibly Diakoptes, possibly Lysach, possibly Lightbringer, was just standing dumb and listening to his, furious at him, wife do all the talking. His life was a child's racing boat bobbing in the stream, suddenly swallowed by the rapids, utterly out of reach.
Forgive them? I thank them for it, Tisis said. Cousin, can you imagine me outmaneuvering the golden spider Andros Guile on the spectrum? Or, failing that, convincing his lick spittles and lackeys to do something contrary to his will?
Antonius paused. He'd obviously never thought about what being on the spectrum entailed.
Perhaps not.
By marrying Kip, I utterly guaranteed the only thing that Irene could hope I might gain from any number of years on the spectrum, timely help from the Giles, and through them, all the 7 satrapies.
He is a good man, a good commander? Antonius asked, as if Kip weren't there, and as if it were one question.
He's barely arrived here, and look, Tisis said.
The fog was clearing, and the extent of Kip's forces was obvious now.
Antonius studied the forces for what seemed the first time. He's united the Cuni War and the Ghosts?
That was answered with nearly simultaneous grunts of assent from Con Arthur and Derwin Allaf. They mirrored each other's displeased looks at each other.
And won a battle freeing the Cuni War from slavery and sinking numerous barges full of supplies for the Blood Robes, Tisis said offhand.
Antonius Malagos was quiet for some time. Kip thought of saying something to sway him, but Tisis motioned subtly to be silent.
Yes, dear. The young man finally said, Lady Irene is considering a treaty of non-aggression with the White King.
What?
Tisis demanded. Derwin Allaf bristled, but her hand motioned for his silence and he said nothing. Antonius went on.
Irene said you and this Guile fighting the Blood Robes might, how'd you say it, preclude the option of peace for us and all of Hrethgar.
Tisis was taken aback.
Does she think we can simply trade with that monster?
I know not what she thinks, nor could I likely understand all the machinations in her mind if she explained them. Your sister has a genius for such things.
I don't like peace with those creatures either, but my trust in her has never been misplaced, and she has given me orders. She won't tolerate anything less than total obedience in this, not with your life in the balance. You are all she loves.
I love her most dearly, too, Tisis said, but sometimes we are called to obey higher things.
My sister is a merchant queen, not a queen in truth, much less a warrior queen. Irene is brilliant, but she thinks others will be rational as well. You remember when you wanted to give your pony to the Laxiats to sell to feed the poor?
He brightened at the memory.
She told me if I wanted to help, I should have her sell the pony. She'd take a small commission, then invest the profits in one of her businesses. In 5 years I could buy a better pony and still give twice the amount of money to the poor, who would surely still be poor.
She thinks the White King is like her. He is not. He's like us. There's no negotiating the best deal with someone who plans to kill you and take everything.
Kip moved to speak again, but Tisis gripped his hand. No.
She called me a zealot that day for trying to obey what I understood Orhulam to be telling me,
Antonius said, with a woundedness unhealed by the passing years.
She didn't understand me at all, despite all her smarts.
And suddenly Kip felt a wind of hope filling his sails with a crack.
It's funny, isn't it, Antonius said, how the Lord of Light asks us to step blind into darkness.
Orhulam always gives us light enough to take the next step, Tisis said.
Ha! Antonius barked. You know me too well.
Orhulam uses the simple to confound the wise, Tisis said,
attempting a light tone.
I'm certainly the former,
Antonius said wryly. But then his open face took on a troubled cast. Finally, he said,
"You seem happy."
"I'm where I'm supposed to be, doing what I was made for," Tisis said.
"No, cousin, I mean, with him."
"Oh," Tisis brightened and took Kip's hand. "He is not only my lord, he is my love."
The thought sent a frisson through Kip. Sure, they had some commitment, at least until one of them revealed they'd never consummated their marriage, and they'd had some sweetness and excitement in the privacy of their tent, at least until recently. And he liked Tisis, and he respected her far more than he had ever expected to. But was that love? Or was she just lying to save their cause? But even if Kip didn't quite believe her, Antonius clearly did. A slow grin broke over his broad face.
"Then my prayers are answered."
"Mine too, cuz," Tisis said.
"Easy, dear. Don't lay it on too thick." Antonius looked down at his hands as if to find an answer there.
"I don't want to kill Foresters. Or Giles.
Especially not for this White King.
Somehow you boxed in Andros Gyle, forcing him to do the right thing in agreeing to your marriage."
He looked up and smiled, and Kip felt all the tension whoosh out of Tisis.
"It's only fair if we box in Irene too, right?"
Giving a perfect court bow and then taking one knee in front of Kip, Antonius said,
"Lord Gyle, I took an oath to Lady Irene Malagos, but my allegiance to Orholm is higher. By the inner light that is my conscience, I know I must disobey her. So, Lord Gyle, if you would take the oath of a man others may justly call oath-breaker, then until the blood robes are destroyed, I pledge my life, my honour, my men, and my fealty to you."
And that didn't go how I expected at all. Kip decided that in the future his legend would be that he moved enemies to break their oaths and swear fealty without him even saying a word. He would be the unmoved mover. Kip, Golden Tongue the Silent. In other words, he was really going to have to be nicer to Tisis.